grew up in Southport Farm, attending a one-room country school in the Hideaway Valley, Hidewood Valley, and graduated from Clear Lake High School in 1968. Today, she is a published author and retired U.S. Navy captain. 4 years at Augustana College in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, provided her with a Bachelor of Arts degree in elementary education, English, and Spanish. When a mandated closure of rural schools ended her teaching dream, Dieckmann enlisted in the U.S. Navy. After 2 years as an aviation storekeeper, she attended Officer Kennedy School and earned a commission in 1975. Designated an aeronautical maintenance duty officer in 1979, Dieckmann was promoted to captain in 1997. She commanded Defense Contract Management Agency Van Nuys in Los Angeles, and her final assignment before retirement was the Office of Naval Inspector General in Washington, D.C. 20th Century Drifter, The Life of Marty Robbins, Live Fast, Love Hard, The Fair and Young Story, are Dieckmann's biography of Country Music Hall of Fame members, Marty Robbins and Fair and Young. Previous books are Navy Green Shirt, A Leader Made, Not Born, A Memoir of Her Military Career, Farm in the Hidewood, My South Dakota Home, her childhood memoir. For 5 years, she wrote a newspaper column for military and travel experiences. Captain Dieckmann is listed in Marquis Who's Who of American Women, 1997 to 98, 2000 to 2001, and 2002 to 2003. She graduated from the Naval War College and holds 2 master's degrees from Embry-Riddle Aeronautic University, Master of Aeronautical Science, and a Master of Business Administration in Aviation. An avid runner, Dieckmann has more than a dozen marathons and ultra-marathons to her credit. She also owns a Mary Kay Beauty consultant business and is active in her Lutheran church. Serves on the VFW Post 629 Funeral Honor Guard. And I also know that she has been with our Honor Guard at times also. She lives in Sioux Falls and has 2 teenage daughters, April and Amanda. Please welcome Diane J. Dieckmann.
My family has been affiliated with the Legion for a while. Mom and Dad joined the Legion Post in Clear Lake, I don't know how many years ago. They're both World War II veterans. And then 2 of my brothers and my sister and I all joined also, so there were 6 of us in the Post. And Mom and Dad and my brother Kenny are gone now, but Ron and Kayo and I are still around. And I'd like to thank Commander Miller for inviting me to speak to you tonight. And he asked me to talk a little bit about my Navy career and a little bit about my book. But I thought I'd start by telling you about the time I got fired. I was one of the first women to become a maintenance officer in the Navy after that career field was opened up to women. And I went through school in 78 and went down to Kingsville, Texas to a training squadron there. There were already enlisted women in that squadron because it was shore duty, but they hadn't had any women maintenance officers there. So I worked hard and worked my way up from branch officer to division officer, and I became the assistant department head. And then when the maintenance officer went on leave, I thought, great. This week, I'm the acting maintenance officer, so I'm in charge of the maintenance department. But that whole week, the commanding officer never wanted to talk to me. He only talked to the maintenance master chief to find out what was going on. And I thought, this isn't right. I'm the person in charge. But I thought, well, you know, he's a commander, and I'm only a lieutenant, and he obviously knows what he's doing. Well, he did. when the maintenance officer came back and they had their semi-annual job change meeting, it was my job as the AMO to post the job changes and talk to the officers about their new jobs and all that. And the CO secretary wouldn't give me the job change list. And it took about 2 days before she finally gave me the list. And I looked at it, and the first name I saw was somebody else's name besides assistant maintenance officer. So I looked for my name, and it was way down at the bottom by material officer, which was the job I had when I checked into the squadron. So I went looking for the maintenance officer, and I said, look what the skipper did to me. He fired me. And, you know, I thought my boss would go find out what was wrong and fix it. But he just looked at the paper and he handed it back to me and he said, oh, you did it, huh? And I said, you knew? You knew I was going to be fired and you didn't tell me? I said, I don't even know what I've done wrong. And he said, well, go talk to the CO and see what he says. Well, he wouldn't tell me either why he fired me. He just said, you continue to do a decent job, you'll get out of here with a good fitness report. And what I figured out eventually was that I hadn't been assertive enough, that this was a test. You know, I was supposed to stick up for myself, and I was supposed to say, hey, I'm in charge, talk to me. But I didn't, so they fired me. And that I learned two lessons from that. One was that I would never treat anybody like that, that if I thought somebody wasn't doing the job, I'd tell them what was wrong, what I expected to correct it, and give them the chance. And the other thing was that if ever I thought I or anybody who worked for me was being left out or treated unfairly, that I would speak up. And I'm proud to say that I always followed those two rules for the rest of my career. And I didn't realize until years later when I was working on my Navy Green Shirt memoir and putting all the pieces of my life together that this had been the defining moment in my career. That was what made me a leader. And because it toughened me up and it gave me backbone. And I realized how important that had been. And that was probably about the best thing that happened to me was that I got fired because it made such a difference in later life and in the way I treated other people. And while I was working on that book and reviewing my life, I was amazed to think of how did this bashful farm girl from South Dakota ever do all this stuff? And I can remember being in maintenance officer school, and on one of the breaks, one of the chiefs had said to me that he thought I sounded arrogant when I said something earlier about I earned everything I'd gotten in the Navy. And I said, why? I worked hard. Everything I've gotten, nobody gave me anything because, oh, you're a woman, you can have this. And he said, well, you know, I don't have a problem with women in the military. As soon as they prove they can do the job, I accept them. And I said, and that's exactly it. When a man checks in, you just expect him to do the job unless he screws it up. And I said, when a woman checks in, she has to prove herself first, and then you'll accept it. And he said, you know, I never thought of it like that before. I guess you're right. And that did happen when I went to my second squadron, which was this was sea duty, and it was a patrol squadron in Jacksonville, Florida, and a combat squadron, and there were no women in that squadron other than the intel officer specialist topside because it was sea duty. And I got there and I thought, well, you know, I've been a maintenance officer for 3 years now, and I'm a senior lieutenant. I get into this new squadron, and I should get a pretty good job. And I got there and checked in and found out they made me material officer. And I went to the MO and I said, you know, I did this job 3 years ago. And he said, well, you don't know anything about patrol planes. You've never been in a combat squadron. So we'll put you in material for a while until you become comfortable. And I thought, comfortable? Has any male lieutenant ever checked into a command and been put in the corner until he becomes comfortable? I said, he would be expected just to jump in there and do the job, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to be given a job and expected to do it. But that wasn't my choice. I realized that they had to become comfortable with me. So I proved myself, and they did, and I made my way up in that squadron, and while I was there, I got promoted to lieutenant commander, and I was assistant maintenance officer before I left there. And about that time, I would have been eligible to go to postgraduate school, but my detailer told me that, well, since you got less than perfect fitness reports when you were in Kingsville, Texas, you probably won't make commander, and he wasn't going to waste the school slot on somebody who wouldn't make commander. But it turned out pretty well, too, because that meant I spent my whole career in the fleet working with sailors and airplanes, and instead of being stashed away in school someplace, so I got my master's degree with the GI Bill in night school, and so that turned out pretty well, too. And I did make commander. I was selected. I was the department head, the maintenance department in Jacksonville, Florida. I had 650 sailors working for me there, and I got selected for captain and went to Japan for 3 years, and was the maintenance officer for the Western Pacific. And then I got selected for major command in Los Angeles, and I had 350 civilians working for me there. And while I was in Los Angeles, I became a mother at age 50 when I adopted my two daughters. And so the three of us moved to Washington, D.C., and I retired from the Navy on the staff of the Naval Inspector General when after 32 years active duty. So while I was in Japan, I also became a writer. I did my two memoirs of Farming the Highwood and Navy Green Shirt. And while I was over there, one of my favorite singers, Farron Young, committed suicide. And I didn't want him to be forgotten. And I thought, how neat it would be to write his biography, to be able to meet all these country singers that I had grown up listening to. And everybody who knew Farron had stories to tell about him because he was such a clown and everybody liked him. So when I moved to Los Angeles in 1999, one weekend, I hopped on a plane and I went to Nashville and I looked up Ralph Emery and I looked up Farron's manager and I went to the Music City News office to just get started. And I knew nothing about writing a biography. I knew nobody in the publishing business. I knew nobody in the music business. And so I decided, well, I'll set 2007 as the year. That would have been Farron's 75th birthday. And I thought, well, that's 8 years from now. That's plenty of time to get this book figured out and for people not to be saying, well, do you have a publisher yet? When's your book going to be published? And I also thought, you know, I'd really like to have Farron's band come back together for this book release party, which I would have in Nashville, of course, and have a band reunion. Well, I didn't know who any of his band members were. I didn't know if they were alive. I didn't know how to find them. But I just knew this was going to work. So I just started plugging away and making phone calls and doing what needed to be done. And in November 2007, my sister and my daughters and I went to Nashville, and we had the book release party for Live Fast, Love Hard, Farron Young Story at the Ernest Pub Record Shop. And that night on the Midnight Jamboree, the country deputies had a reunion, and band members from the 60s to the 90s, who some of them had never met each other before, they put on a concert that went out over WFM radio and on the internet around the world. And I thought, wow, you know, this really worked. I started from knowing nothing to success. And I, later on then, at that time, I didn't know anything about the philosophy of The Secret. How many of you have heard of that, the book or the movie about The Secret, the philosophy that you put something out into the universe, and you know, it's ask and believe and you shall receive. If you put it out there and you really believe it's going to happen and you work toward it, it will succeed. And I realized that was what had happened with my Fahrenheit biography. I had no idea how to make this work. I just knew it was going to. And I believed it, and I worked toward it, and it did. And obviously, you have to have a little bit of passion to do something like this. While I was on active duty, while I was in the Navy, my passion was always leadership. I was always working to be a better leader, the better maintenance officer. My goal was to leave the Navy better than I found it, to make and to improve the lives of my sailors. And that happened. I still once in a while hear from somebody who said, you know, you made such a difference back then, or I really appreciated you, or something like that. So then when I retired, then I transferred my passion to finishing my biographies on Marty Robbins, Farron Young first, and then Marty Robbins, and that one was, we went to Nashville last year, to the Country Music Hall of Fame, to have 20th Century Drifter published. So my challenge tonight is to all of you, to what is your passion, what is your dream, what would you like to have happen? You put it out there, you know what it is you want out of life and about how long it'll take, but you don't have a clue how to get there, and that's fine. You don't have to. You just have to know it's out there waiting for you somewhere, and the path will open up, and you have to take action when it does. So you have to do the steps as they come along, but that's what I'll leave you with tonight. What is it that you see out there that you believe in, you know you can make it happen? Just believe it will, and the path will open for you, and you do the steps, and you will succeed. Happy birthday. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Diane. That was good. Appreciate it. Thank you. She and I were talking. Oh, we're out.